It's 19 hours 30 UTC on Friday, December 29th, and this is Zimbabwe Today.
Some parts of the capital city have gone for weeks or months with dry taps despite above normal rain in Zimbabwe.
That was Sebastian Mofu in Harare, talking about complaints about the quality of public drinking water. Good evening, I'm Kudzanai Mutetwa.
And I'm Chidonjere on VOA Zimbabwe Today.
In Zimbabwe, some residents in the capital, Harare, want the mayor to step down because of chronic bad tap water. He had urged citizens to use caution as water in Zimbabwe's capital was not safe to drink. Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare for VOA.
Residents directed their anger at Mayor Bernard Manyenyeni during a public meeting where they complained about muddy, colored and smelly drinking water. Some parts of the capital city have gone for weeks or months with dry taps despite above normal rain in Zimbabwe last season. Linda Masarira is one resident who attended the meeting, which lasted close to 2 hours.
Water is a basic fundamental human right. Water is life. When we've got no water, people die, and people are dying. Our health department is in shambles. A lot of people are actually suffering from diseases that they don't even understand because of consuming this dirty water. Everyone should get clean, safe, potable water coming out of their taps. From here, we're going to make an appointment with the local government minister. Since the mayor said his hands are tied, if we don't get any luck there, we go to the president's office. We'll go all the way until safe, clean water is coming out of our taps.
Most parts of Zimbabwe do not have access to clean water, forcing residents to rely on open sources, thus exposing them to waterborne disease. A cholera outbreak in 2008-2009 claimed close to 5,000 lives, according to UN statistics. The situation could have been worse had international organizations such as USAID not chipped in providing water treatment chemicals, among other interventions, to ensure proper sanitation in Zimbabwe. Sharon Mumbula fears that the situation in Harare might escalate to 2008 and 2009 levels unless Mayor Manyenyeni steps down.
I'm wondering why he's even sitting there, why he was hired. Clearly he can't. He can't execute his duties, he can't execute his job, because some of the answers that he gave us, they're not even relevant to the problem. Because clearly he can't say, he doesn't know where the unclean water is coming from, but yet it's the whole of Harare that is affected. So it's time for him to go.
At the meeting Friday, the mayor said he would not step down, but would not seek re-election in 2018. After the meeting, Manyenyeni told VOA that he was hopeful Harare's water problems would end one day.
We think we are providing you with water that is good for you and your family to drink. We have seen experiences of water that does not look good. Water that looks greenish and brownish, water that froths or foams. Let's share the responsibility. While we assume and claim that our water is clean and good to drink, we ask you to exercise caution wherever you are and make your own personal decision about what you see, what you smell. Is it good enough for you to drink? If you are not satisfied while we're fixing the problem, please avoid drinking water which you consider suspect. The time frame relates to the time the availability of forex, which is not a council problem, it's a national problem.
Zimbabwe is facing a critical shortage of foreign currency, forcing businesses to source it on the black market, resulting in price increases on most commodities. The mayor ruled out getting foreign currency on the black market so that Harare can import water treatment chemicals. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Joining us in the studio with a look back at some of the news of the week is our colleague from the VOA Zimbabwe service, Tanono Kawande. Could you tell us a little bit about the price hikes?
The price hikes have always been manipulated. Governments do that all the time. But in our case, it has been a little bit exaggerated because of the currency situation. We don't even have our own currency. So that tends to give a lot of impetus to governments that want to manipulate the flow of money within the country. So we are faced with a situation where the prices can go up and up and up because we are not manufacturing much on our own, and most of our foodstuffs are imported. So what we going to see is that people from outside, like South Africa, they might hike their own prices because they are taking advantage of the situation that exists in the country. And as a result, the food market becomes a little bit squashed. That's when we start having things on the black market and things like that. So the price hikes is just a symptom of the bad things that are happening. And if it's not controlled, we are in for a rude awakening. Unfortunately, it is not a very prudent thing for any government to interfere with the price of commodities in the country. So we wait to see what this new government is going to do, how they are going to handle the situation.
What can you tell us about a report that the government might not necessarily put price controls on certain goods or any goods?
That would be a good move. Unfortunately, it cannot be done on its own. If they say they are not going to put any price controls on goods, mm-hmm. they must also ensure that those goods come in the country in abundance so that there's no need for people to turn to the black market. Because the problem here is that because of the scarcity of almost every item in the country, people buy these things and hoard them, then release them on the market slowly so that they can hike the prices. So for the government just to step in and say we are not going to put price controls without putting in place other safeguards to make sure that prices that are charged for the commodities are normal prices that are comfortable for the people to manage. Mm-hmm. Right.
We're also noticing on social media, a lot of people are complaining about money shortage. Is that in any way connected to the price hikes as well?
Not necessarily, because what was happening, the old thing of supply and demand comes into play. The situation we are facing now is not necessarily because of the commodities, but because of our own issues with our own currency. You remember a few years ago when the Zim dollar, which was quite strong in its day, mm-hmm. started getting eroded to the point that it was not worth much. Then they started printing money, the so-called bond notes, which found its way back into the market. And that increased the price of commodities because the bond notes were not worth anything by mm-hmm. themselves. So the relationship between the lack of money in the country and the commodities, I don't see them being very, very much related, because all one needs to do, go to South Africa, get two trailers full of commodities, dump them in Harare or in Bulawayo, and then people scramble for that. They have to turn on the black market to get the money because these are imported goods. You cannot pay for them with bond notes. So the relationship there, they might seem to be from the same stable, but they are not.
And what can the government do to both curb the increase of prices as well as ensure that there is that currency flow that people can access?
There are quite a few things that the government can do. But the one thing that they should not do is to interfere in the price of commodities, which unfortunately becomes necessary because there are unscrupulous people who hike prices for their own personal, you know, immediate gain at the expense of the majority of people in the country. So it has to be approached from all angles. If they are going to remove all any controls from this area, mm-hmm. they must make sure that the commodities that the people need mm-hmm. are available in abundance, so that that alone will keep the prices of those commodities down.
That was Tanono Gawande of the VOA Zimbabwe service.
During the festive season in Zimbabwe, there is always a higher number of road fatalities. This year, the number has been much higher than in previous years. It is now at 112. Officials are now asking if the message of road safety is reaching the public. The Road Safety Council of Zimbabwe had set a goal to reduce road fatalities by 60% by the year 2020. VOA Zimbabwe service reporter Tanonoka one day spoke with Tatenda Chinoda, the spokesperson of the council. He spoke to our colleague Tanonoka one day about the fatality rate and why he thinks it has increased this year.
So far, it's pretty bad news, a very sad reality where we have witnessed, or it has been reported, that 112 people lost their lives from 15 December to 26 December. Whereas, as we compare the same period last year, we lost only 66 lives, which means we are really in trouble in our intention to reduce road deaths by 50% by the year 2020.
What do you think is the main cause for such a high upturn in the number of deaths on the roads this year?
As you might know, road safety campaign is a repent or perish gospel, which gospel hinges on behavior change or the avoidance of human error. We see blatant recklessness by the main actor of the road safety matrix being the driver. Our drivers are so many errors which can be avoided. This is not to restrict this to combi drivers or public service vehicle drivers, but all our drivers, from private drivers, church drivers, community drivers, and family drivers, are doing that in broad daylight. A good example is the Lundi combi disaster, where the driver attempted to overtake very blind case at full speed, thereby resulting in the death of both such innocent souls. And that's what we are trying to fight as we mount campaigns via SMS campaign, via physical presence on the roads and everything.
What other contributory factors are at play here, Mr. Chinoda?
We also see that people have a tendency during our Christmas Day or Christmas days of trying to drive vehicles when they are not licensed, number one. Of trying to drive during the night, number two, when they have opportunity to do so during the day. And the other thing is unauthorized driving, where our teenagers, our youth, steal vehicles or get vehicles without permission of their adults or guardians or parents. In the process, because of the guilty conscience of having taken those vehicles without permission, because they want to show off, they end up resulting in crashes.
In your findings so far, compared to the other previous findings, do you see a trend of any kind emerging, or that remains consistent as the death toll rises?
The trend is established alongside the high risk of speeding, inappropriate speed, as well as excessive speed, because our roads are not in the best setup in terms of being forgiving roads. They were declared a state of disaster last year, the beginning of this year, because of the cyclone that wrecked havoc on our land. So we expect that overnight, or in the next second, a driver can change their behavior and adjust their driving to the conditions which are adverse. We also note that there is lack of brothers keep attitude. People just assume the driver is aware of what they are doing. They bought this vehicle, private or public, and fall asleep. They are not collectively conscious on the issues to do with road safety, how to be safe, how to drive from point A to point B. At the end of the day, we are in far worse trouble, like far worse trouble than any other of these known diseases which have already bedeviled our humanity.
That was VOA Zimbabwe service reporter Tanuna Gawande. He was speaking with Tatenda Chinoda of the Roads Safety Council. You're listening to Zimbabwe Today, live from Voice of America Studio 22. I'm Chidondrede in Washington, D.C. At 44 past the hour, we continue with news about Zimbabwe. One of the major economic highlights of 2017 is the foreign currency shortage. The cause and origin of the problem has been a subject of debate. Many Zimbabweans have taken to social media with their comments on the problem.
Brandon says, I thought they were exaggerating about the cash shortage in Zimbabwe. There simply is no cash here.
Ashley Mosley says, there is a cash shortage in Zimbabwe. The line for the ATM is wrapped around the block. Folks line up as early as 6 a.m. at the bank. Each family can only take out $50 per week.
Tatenda Mariga says, there's more and more shortage of cash in Zimbabwe. Which method of payment can we use? EcoCash? We're being charged higher and no one accepts it.
Alicia says, you can't hold the economy hostage.
It's now more than 2 years since the first massive wave of uncontrolled migration hit Europe's shores. Tens of thousands are from Africa, including South Sudan and Eritrea. There are fierce disputes between member states over a quota system to settle the refugees. The processing of applicants and the logistics of returning those whose requests to stay have been rejected. Tackling problems associated with uncontrolled migrant flows has forced European Union member states to shift and refocus its migration policies. Reporter Catherine Field in Paris explains.
In 2017, the migration storm that battered the European Union seemed to be in a lull. All that crisis talk of a Europe under siege faded away, and members of the EU focused more on internal problems. But as with all things, the lull has only been relative, and it may not be many months before the migration headache becomes a full-blown migraine once again. The number of migrants who have arrived in Europe illegally this year so far is just over 175,000. And in 2016, it was 363,000. By way of comparison, at least 1 million people arrived in 2015, according to a UN estimate. That drop in arrivals has been put down to several factors. In March 2016, the EU reached a deal with Turkey for stemming the flow of migrants crossing the Aegean Sea to the Greek islands, essentially closing the Balkan entry route into Europe. The EU also set up a European Border and Coast Guard, a force which saw more than 1,500 additional officers deployed. And it threw open the money spigot. It allocated more than 17 billion euros to deal with the migration crisis, and more than half of that money went to refugees and migrants in countries outside the EU. So to put it another way, what the EU has done in practice has been to transfer policing its external borders to outside Europe. Typical of this approach, a few months ago the EU stepped up efforts to prevent migrants from crossing from Libya. The EU boosted funding and logistical support for the Libyan Coast Guard and for a crackdown on people smugglers. At the same time, it has joined with the African Union and the UN to put in place a program for voluntary repatriations. Since late November, at least 3,100 migrants stranded in Libya have been given help to return home. As a result, on the Mediterranean, the number of migrants reaching Italy from Libya has now fallen to its lowest number in over 4 years. So the number of migrant arrivals in Europe has fallen sharply since that peak of 2015, but no one in the EU is crying victory. The European Union has still not put together a coherent internal strategy for coping with migrants, either for redistributing them among EU members or for integrating them. Two EU members, Germany and Sweden, are proportionately shouldering the lion's share of the burden. A much-trumpeted plan to redistribute migrants among member states has been put on the shelf. It ran into hefty opposition from populist-led countries in Central and Eastern Europe. They complain they lack the money to take in migrants, and they say they don't want to be bossed around. But the strains of migration in countries not used to ethnic or religious minorities has fed xenophobia and right-wing populism, even in areas with relatively few immigrants. Populism is eroding support for mainstream parties in Germany, Austria, the Netherlands, and Italy. So the migration question remains unsolved, and the pressures are not going to go away. Right now, the EU finds itself in a dilemma when it comes to migration. Morally, it wants to abide by its reputation as a beacon of freedom and human rights. But politically, it cannot cope with massive human influxes, even if many of those who say they are asylum seekers are often economic migrants who are fleeing poverty. As 2018 looms, there seems little the EU can do right now but cross its fingers and hope that the migrants stay at home. For VOA News, this is Catherine Field in Paris.
As we've heard, many Africans have left the continent in search of employment in Europe. In the past year, the European Union has sought new ways to encourage investment and jobs in Africa. But for some Africans, even that is not enough to get ahead. The United Nations Refugee Agency says the problem is that they are stateless. They lack official citizenship documents that allow them to buy property or start legal businesses. Many are former refugees themselves, some going back generations. In Kenya, the UNHCR is lobbying the government to grant citizenship to local communities who have lived for decades without official nationality. From the coastal port city of Mombasa, Ruben Chama reports.
According to the UN Refugee Agency, the stateless communities in Kenya include the Pemba, who came from Tanzania in 1930s and settled mainly along the Kenyan coast. They also include the Shona, who arrived as missionaries from Zimbabwe in 1960s. Others, who have lived in Kenya for decades without formal citizenship, are descended from migrants from Rwanda, Burundi, Congo, Somalia, and India. Wanja Munaita is the Kenyan-based UN Refugee Agency's Assistant Protection Officer in charge of statelessness.
It's a big problem. In Kenya, for example, estimates of 18,000, but those are estimates. We don't have a comprehensive figure. But the problem is quite big. We know that there are many people, many thousands, perhaps in the millions, when we speak about Africa, who do not have legal identity. If you don't have legal identity, you can't be recognized, you will not be accorded basic human rights by the state in which you find yourself.
On November 4th, the world marked the I Belong campaign to end statelessness, where the UN Refugee Agency and its partners sought to draw global attention to the millions of people denied nationality and citizenship the world over. Shame Amisi Makame is a chairman and a village elder of the Pemba community in Kenya's Kwale County. As a result of not having a legal identity, statelessness has made me hopeless. I used to have 3 homes, but none of them was registered under my name. I also bought a plot, but I had to use the name of my neighbor. I've no rights since I'm stateless. I urge the Kenyan government to help us, to help get our legal identity. If we get our legal identity, everything else will be all right. UNHCR officials are calling on governments to end the discriminatory practice by 2024. Hundreds of thousands of Africans are among those who lack proper birth certificates and identity papers. Some have been stateless since independence, others were driven out of their countries by civil war. Most of the communities here remain stateless due to a lack of identification documents, including birth certificates. Kenya's nationality laws have made it difficult for many to access citizenship. Felix Lore is the executive director of the human rights advocacy group, the Haki Center.
Kenya applies the Kenyan nationality in 2 ways. First, we have nationality through birth, and then we have nationality through registration. Whereas one becomes a Kenyan national by birth when either the mother or the father is a Kenyan. So on the other hand, when you go for the registration again, the most basic one is you must have been residing in Kenya within a minimum of 7 years continuously for a continuous period. So what hinders Pembas at that particular point is they have been living in Kenya for much longer than that period. But the problem is, how then can they prove that they have been living in Kenya for those years, because they don't have any other document. They don't have any document to prove that.
Officials say a large number of the people affected by statelessness in Kenya are children. As a result of being denied citizenship, most stateless people are often not allowed to go to school, see a doctor, or even own property. Munaita says through the I Belong campaign, UNHCR hopes it will sensitize governments and other stakeholders to take the issue seriously.
Our place is to advocate, is to keep advocating with government in order for the government to recognize these communities and pockets of individuals who find themselves stateless in the country. So we are advocating through the I Belong campaign. We also have the Global Plan to End Statelessness, which was launched in 2014.
Globally, there are at least 10 million people who are stateless, most of them minorities. Through the campaign, the UN Refugee Agency hopes to put an end to statelessness by the year 2024 and also prevent new cases from emerging. In 2014, Tanzania granted citizenship to some 200,000 refugees from neighboring Burundi who had lived in the country since 1972, a move hailed by the UN Refugee Agency. Just last year, the Makonde, a community of over 4,000, became Kenya's 43rd officially recognized tribe. They came from northern Mozambique and southeast Tanzania nearly 100 years ago to work on sisal and sugarcane farms. Earlier this year, the Makonde activists met with President Uhuru Kenyatta, who approved their naturalization as citizens. He apologized to them that it took so long for them to enjoy the legal rights of fellow Kenyans and added, "Today is the last day you will be called visitors." Ruben Chama, VOA News, Mombasa, Kenya.
That is it for us this evening on VOA Zimbabwe Today. I'm Kudzinai Mutetwa.
And I'm Chido Ndrede. We'll be back again Monday at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. And VOA Shona and Debele broadcast can be heard at 7 a.m., 2 p.m., and 7 p.m.
Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Debele, and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7news.com. We now leave you with some music by Ja Praza.
Kunodiwa haga mukaka, yeta chinjamba. Kunodiwa haga mukaka,